went out on this, it's not the first. I did this plate. Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
I did this plate in Paris, and a number of things come to mind about it. It was not the first, but the second polymer plate. Also, I'm using viscosity, viscosity printing in that this is tan and yellow below and then green over. As a matter of fact, there's a layer on and then you clean out some of it and then go across with yellow. And it makes a very nice kind of amalgam pressed together color. And it also kind of it puts the discipline of the I had done the copper plates, the subtractive plates. I had the first I see by my notes there that the first combination of silkscreen and the plate was done before I left for. To study in Paris, but many of these things came together when I came back, and also I had invested by that time in some big rollers.
Is this intaglio or relief here, or is it just, how do you get this
both
third dimensional?
Well, that's the trick, and in this case, I exposed higher spots. I went back in and picked them out. Those are, I put a veil down and then I would pick these out to amplify. As I pointed out last time, these plates are not all that thick because you can't have between the lowest low and the highest high, you can't have more than a 16th. And so you develop the illusion thickness, and then by going back through the veil and picking these things out, my whole thrust at the time was to try to make them sculptural, more dimensional. And
for the record, that was called fossil fish.
Yeah, right. And here we had I don't know if you remember this fellow. He came on
okay.
He was doing
from California,
right?
Yeah.
And there were stirrings in the collograph area. He was gluing pieces of paper down, and also using rollers. So this was not a personal invention, but there were many people interested in those things. I was thinking our friend down at the man and wife.
Ginzel. Yes.
He's the first one I ever saw to run real forks through the the press. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many bugaboos about these disciplines that when you see somebody that just absolutely doesn't pay any attention and, you know, Warrington uses a cut plate. I'd never heard of a cut plate, and that just you just can put anything through that press if you really think about it. And later on, I was visited by Hugh Townley because the press has an inch and a quarter travel. That is, it'll go the roller will go type high. We actually did some of his sculptures. This is one that. It's not the same one, but you can actually print that.
You put this through the press.
Through the press.
Fantastic.
But I didn't quite get across to him the need for not overdoing, you know. I got the best, and we really reach for this. You can see it. We could print actual. And I think it was the release from some of the breath-holding techniques that I had been exposed to, and particularly lithography always seemed to me ominous in its chemistry. Like yeah, if you didn't, if you breathed on the stone at the wrong time, everything would go to hell. And I liked this, and particularly after I got my own press and started putting things together three-dimensionally, I really got interested in it. This is some early silk screens I spoke of picking up. This is, I got two awards from the Milwaukee Art Center, and instead of I got the first prize, which was a plaque, and the second prize was $500, and of course I would have much rather had this second prize, but, and I never discovered what to do with those until this technique came up, and I used watch parts. And this was, I never did an edition of these, but simply did these things so that you could teach them. And this is a, this is sort of an overlap. This is a silk screen of a sculpture. The sculpture is still up on this wall. He took a photo of it. But back in the '60s, now we're talking '50s. These are talking '50s because yes, this was a. This was a print that I had in my Paris show, so it had to be done pre-60s. So this is 50s.
Isn't that similar to what the University Club
Yeah, it looks like it probably is.
The University Club has three of
these. Yeah, three prints.
Right. Halfway down the stairs. Right. And,
badly framed. Yeah. but what do you do? This is kind of interesting. This was in... that's the old Minotaur again, of course.
And, could you hold the mic?
25 years after that, then I did that, the big bronze Minotaur. That's, if it don't work the first three times, bring it out and do it again.
Change the material.
Right. That's a very, that's a 40s.
a very print. Successful print, though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a good show print.
Right. It's. I spoke the other day, you only had to do one good one a year because you could hit every show in the country. And sometimes that'd be seven and eight different shows.
This is Don Quixote we're looking at.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you pick? How did you decide to do Don Quixote at this particular point in time? Or any of your...
I think we touched on that a little before.
Just the mythological...
I think that you get an idea about something you want to do and you look for a subject matter that might entertain that technique, which is shouldn't be the way it goes, I guess. You should have this great God-sent idea and then find a way to do it. But it's not many times these were... technical experiments, Don Quixote, you know. Another thing in print, I'm afraid many of were travel prints, and you know, if you go to Greece and do a lot of prints on Greece, everybody that's been to Greece buy those prints. And there's certain things like that people that I admired, Houdini, people, you know, it's something that they recognize and identify with, maybe. Who don't identify with Don Quixote, you know? And, this is the King's Joke, which is a variant in Technical Pursuits. I just wanted, and this is gold leaf. I printed the gold leaf varnish and laid 11 sheets on each one.
Wow.
A yeoman effort, but I'm not sure it was worth it.
Didn't you also do a chess set?
Yes.
So to me, this was kind of related.
Right, but I printed those. I got lazy about laying gold, so I printed the whole print on gold paper. And this is the print I did for the Art Institute print membership that I described before. This is after getting back from Spain. This is a picador, another type of Don Quixote, although much maligned. Also, at this time, I was cutting up old prints. This is and using them to. It wasn't a collage. I actually printed the old. I would take these and rub them, and recreate those sections. But the idea of making up a total with parts, which I'm still doing in bronze, has been a preoccupation of mine. So I kind of like it. And then to have people respond to them, you know, artists that can say what they want, it's nice to be loved. And you know, if you do 30 or 40 prints, he's doing 50. 50 was seemed to be for me the right number. You didn't get embarrassed with getting stuck with 49 of them, and you would because you could get them around to dealers. And I was usually able to. Well, all of these I have only one, and that's sort of a tribute.
So the edition sold out.
Yeah, all of these. These are in a drawer that I just take out. There were times, I don't know if I took out a sample of that or not, but I had, there were times when I was trying to be a gestural artist, and I would do these things, and then finally I'd run out of gas and turn them over and print horses on them. It looked fine.
You were always a good horse drawer.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking as a bad horse drawer.
Well, you have to want to, you know. I mean,
well, I put horses in, but they don't look like your horses.
This is kind of interesting that even back in the 60s, I was lusting to do sculpture, and of course, in prints, I could do them much bigger than I could actually afford to do them. And this was a variation, the Suck Machine, which is a squeegeeless printer, and I found it charming. This is all done in one air draw. Put the paint on the screen and put it down, and it has a suction pump, and you know what pressure to take it to, and it goes, and that's it. This was, I got this not to do this sort of thing, but for the backgrounds in for the intaglios, I could do 10 and 12 colors at once by putting them around, and I would just about run through 50, and then I press the plate on top of it. So it was a facility for putting color. Also, the drawing action seemed to take the color into the paper rather than a squeegee leaving it on top. So that these are some single printing with. I don't know if the story is worth telling, but I had applied for the Guggenheim one year and been turned down. And so I did the big mural in Milwaukee. It was 12 by 24, which at that time was the biggest silkscreen mural in the. But since then, of course, there have been a lot of them done big. But I was doing that all the year, and so I applied for the Guggenheim again, you know, and I sent in my prints, and they said, "Wow, we are interested in your prints, but we've seen all these before." I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, when does your committee meet again?" And they said, "In 7 days." I said, "Oh, okay." So I, very out of necessity, invented a method very quick. This is wrinkled China paper, or I also used it. Remember the old airplane paper that was porous?
Yeah.
I would cut these out, and then these are double, and then one stroke, bang! You either made it or you didn't. So then sometimes you did that over old prints. But I cobbled together a half a dozen prints and got them off to New York. And
You got the
Guggenheim. And I got the Guggenheim.
That's a wonderful Guggenheim story.
Yeah. Well,
literally,
I've
heard.
Yeah. These are just a big discussion about the development of this polymer plate. We pretty well covered it. This is with a roller. It had several advantages. The silk screen has to be printed with the paper dry, and it's printed with the integral wet. So you have to have a, let's see, this has to be smaller so that when it goes bigger, it stretches out and you get a reasonable registration on the color. That's the one that I'm doing
Well, it's a good example of the fact that the Day-Glo colors don't fade if they're properly displayed. Right. And this, what's the date on this about?
Well, this is 70. Yeah. It's 25 years old.
There.
And yeah, I think it's probably less fugitive than some of the things we put on with rollers. I'm not sure. And I've had silk screens, just pure silk screens, just absolutely fade out. I had a lady just bring one back. She says, "This faded." And I fortunately found a copy that was in tucked away, had not been exposed to the air. I says, "Have another one."
I had a magic marker drawing that was bought by John Wilde. He had it hanging in his house in a sunny hallway, maybe on purpose.
I don't
know. And it was very embarrassing because every night I would go out there every now and then, and I noticed that it was a little fainter every time I thought.
You should bring your marker with you and touch it up.
And then finally one day, there it is, you know, blank. It faded away completely.
Oh, boy. Is that the reduction process?
Yeah, it's reduction.
Exactly.
But, and, you know, the Day-Glos have such a bad name for fading, but my experience is that they don't, if they're properly.
Well, I borrowed this one back from my daughter. It's framed. That's a, and that's 25 years old and has been out, and it hasn't faded one bit.
Yeah, anything will fade in direct sunlight, but if you in an interior space.
Another thing I was able to do with the plate, not only in surface, but this was sculptured of sculptured velvet. You know, I don't know how they do it, but I just glued this to a plate and then lacquered it repeatedly, and of course lacquer assumes the contours, and so I was able to underprint it with red, and it's another kind of plate. Another thing you could do was that's kind of available to you in etching, but you could do split fountain. And thereby, if you had a giant form here that you wanted to, it's rather phallic to look at it. But anyway,
depends on which is the top.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're looking
right.
At it upside down.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyway, you can do split fountain in it so that you get the facility of, I don't know if that's a viable use. But, and there is another one. And this print, that's with the day glow. And that thing has hung on. I don't know if it's because you isolate it under ink, under printing ink, or what.
What kind of paper is this you use?
This is all French 100% rag. Mm-hmm. What do they call it? Reeves Heavyweight. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I used it simply because I can get it in large sizes, and it seemed to do everything I wanted with silk screen and as well as intaglio. There's some cut plates, which sometimes I used sewing. And Ulysses, he returns in his own coat, and they've been doing man stuff around the world, and I was thinking of a coat that he had sewn back together himself, and so I had this sort of clumsy sewing, and I had Lois Johnson was my assistant, and she said, "Would you like me to help you with that sewing?" And I said, "No, no, I want this to be man sewing."
Close relationship between your prints and your sculpture.
Oh, well, sometimes it's direct.
In
the case of the horseman, and it usually that was sometimes decided. I have to admit, by the fact if you sold the whole edition and you didn't want to do another edition, you'd do a sculpture, and then it got so I was editioning the sculpture, so I switched to something else. You know. This is my one and only lithograph that was done actually from the drawing and on metal plate. And I was going to have it run off for me, but because I'm inclined to get confused with lithography, but it never went into edition. I don't know. I lost enthusiasm about it or something. This was another one of Associated American Commission, that one. And, that was done with just a simple veil. We're talking about the viscosity again. And then I just pick these out, take the veil out so it would bring it. That, but I had to do, in order to get the 50 commission edition, I had to do 150, I guess, because it varies so wildly, and when you get them all at once, they tend to look at them, you know. So
was that for Sylvan Cole?
Yeah.
Right, he would look closely.
Yes. And here's some. There again is a gold paint, which is silk screened on. And then I've never had been able to use a gold etching ink, but you could sure silk screen it. That was my first, that's the one I did with Cohn that summer, and mm-hmm. I learned about aquatint. He was doing lions, and I was doing surgeons.
Yeah, good aquatint.
Some control. It's interesting titles. I put this on. I had 6 eye operations, and it always seemed to me that the doctor would stop and reassess all of his thinking about it and then start. So I called this hesitation. Well, nobody wants their doctor to be hesitant, you know. So, and I noticed I didn't sell anything. So I changed it to the surgeon. And of course, sold them all. So don't overlook the value of the title, right?
Yeah, very important, very important.
This was one, the only Paris etching I did. I learned to run a gravure and control aquatint to an extent. And this was the, I was always struck by the clochards who lived after the subway closes at 12, would, in the wintertime, would get down against the grates because all the warm air from the subway would come, from the metro would come up. And so they were always camped around in these places with their packs. And I suppose a comment on the homeless. But there were some humorous things about, you know, they once had a party, some society person gave a party on the Rue, whatever it was, a clochard party, and everybody dressed up as clochards, which was really cute, except the clochards heard about this and saw a great opportunity to get a lot to drink. So you couldn't tell who was who. There was also the time that they passed a law against these fellows, and they took them all out of, they took them out to the provinces. They thought that they were gathering too much in Paris, and so it took them about 24 hours to get back. Some of them, they said, came by taxi. Well, these are some student friends that I'm not sure are bear. And some 60s stuff. We had a young man here, Falana, that I thought did some pretty gutsy 60s prints. As a matter of fact, I tried to get him to replace me here and didn't get to first base. They don't want, they're not sure about blacks, and they're sure about angry blacks. So. But he was a good, he printed for me for 3 years. And trouble was, he, but, you know, he'd been teaching school in the South, and he talked black, and, you know, we'd rather have somebody that if they called you on the phone, you wouldn't know, you know. And, anyway.
When you look at a print, can you tell, I mean, obviously, in this case, the subject matter, but can you tell by the technique and everything approximately when that print was made?
Yeah, and I can also put it into, with the student prints, I know going through those, I've got 200 slides. I remember, I don't know if this answers your question. I think it's more I identify the person who did it, and then I remember at what period they were in the school. But I can tell from a work that the person's image comes up to me immediately. That's a peculiar kind of, sometimes I can't summon up their name quite that fast, but... and you know, when they were here, sometimes by the subject, not always, you know, we're still doing, we have a new sweep on still lives, and then you don't know when it was done, but many of the subjects are, and especially in the, you know, during the 60s when everybody was, you know, all pants off on subject matter, and yeah, you can, in a way. You can't come up with the exact, but you can come close. Well, have you seen enough?
Well, I think we've had a thorough look, Dave.
Well,
we've
had
a very good look. And
I was trying to think of the things that would be relevant to you, and I certainly don't know what those would be, and if you know. Questions. There are big gaps in here, 10-year gaps.
Well, it's been really a fascinating look because we're looking at themes, thematic material, we're looking at process, we're looking at your career, you know, the way process evolved for you.
Yeah, that's what fascinates me, how you just go from one technique and you build on it and you keep moving along.
Well, it's served me right into sculpture, you know.
Yeah.
It's a the best way for an artist, I went to New York this, I was there this week, last week, and I was looking at some Chamberlain sculpture, and I was thinking the way to succeed as an artist is to take one theme and just keep with it. You know, Chamberlain sculpting, he's doing exactly the same thing he did 20 years ago. He's got a building with 7 floors, car bodies, and he's crunching. There are only so many ways that you can crunch a car body, but he's done them all, and now I see he is painting them before they're crunched. He has fancy stuff on them. They are crunched, and then you can see. But every time something comes up that is a technical challenge, I just fall out of the tree and start pursuing a lot of more things that I don't know anything about. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, you really couldn't have followed
no, you
that way. You know, I mean, it might look desirable, but yeah. You couldn't do it. You wouldn't be happy. Nor would most artists.
Rationalize and say, but you might be richer if you picked out the right thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, or you have a whole studio full of the same thing.
Well, but I think the incredible dimension of exploration here is what's so impressive, and it is
right.
The transfer of ideas from one form to the next, and pursuit of new expression with new technology. Art presumably is growing as you experience these changes
in
the availability of material.
Consistency, too. Yeah. I mean, really, the ideas are so consistent, and the themes, the return to themes, the enlarging on the themes.
Changing them into a different medium.
Yeah, right. Well, like a very different day.
It's sort of like a search, you know.
Yeah.
It keeps going on and on, and now it's getting bigger with the sculpture.
Well, I've thought that this is true, and it's very exciting, and I've often, though, on the other side, thinking that, you know, that it might be your return to all these subjects again and again. It could be a simple poverty of ideas, but... It's just that you see another way. I mean, just Joseph's coat is just enough to... I had a Jewish gentleman come up to me at an exhibition and put his hand on my arm and says, I don't know how, as a Gentile, you should have such feeling for the Old Testament. Well, I was barely aware that it was an Old Testament. But I'm not going to take anything from him. And I said, it's a very profound book.
Right, it's won a lot of prizes.
Yeah. A lot of people involved.
Yeah, it's done all right. Caused a little trouble here and there, too.
Well, should we shut her down?
I think we better. Yeah. I think that